The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. If you're a returning favorite, then congrats, you're a member of our Fresh Ketchup crew. If you're new to the show, welcome home. My name is Mark Ellis, and I am the host today. I'll be steering the ship, or playing the game, as it were, for this particular episode. My wonderful co-host Jacqueline Coley is off today because she's on vacation. She's probably having her toes touch the sand of some exotic Hawaiian locale. Meanwhile, I'm here in Los Angeles. And, you know, people tell me, Mark, you work hard. You should take a vacation sometimes. But then I start to think about it, and I get to talk movies and tell jokes for a living. Because of everybody who's listening or watching this show right now, my entire life is a vacation. So thank you. And we're going to talk about a movie that has, I guess, some sort of vacation destinations, but it would be a bold move. It'd be a bold move if you went to any of these places that are depicted in the film, because we're talking about Jumanji, the 1995 Jumanji, the OG, the one that kicked it off, starring Robin Williams, Bonnie Hunt, a couple of cute tykes, including Kirsten Dunst. So that movie, shockingly, I know, I'm going to break a lot of inner children hearts right now. It's 52% rotten on the tomato meter, if you can believe it. It is barely fresh on the audience score, with 62%, but it's still, I don't know, sounds a little low to me. So we're going to be talking about that with three very special guests who happen to be dear friends of mine, who have launched a new podcast endeavor underneath their banner of The World Girls. That's right. Roxy, Steph, and Doreen are going to be joining me momentarily. But first, big fan shout out time. Everybody seems to be begging for us to talk about Jumanji, and that's been going on for quite some time. Here you go. So you're welcome. Sean McGrahan, Jacob Schrader, Nicholas Bayfield, he's a returning champ, Sol Laredo, and English teacher Alex Hellier and his year 8 students. So everyone in Alex's class right now, I want you to pay attention, spit the gum out, bang erasers after class, and right now pay attention to whatever Professor Hellier's telling you, because he has good taste in film, or at least for this one. And I don't really have good taste in anything except when it comes to choosing guests for this show, because producer Lucy and I were talking it over, and we said, who could we have to step in for Jacqueline, and who could we have as a special guest talking about Jumanji? And then, like a bolt of lightning, it hit us. The stars of the new podcast, Bitch Out of Water, I didn't come up with the title, I'm just the messenger here. Underneath the World Girls banner, it is Steph Sabra, Dorina Ariano, and Roxy Stryer, my three pals. Welcome to the show, everyone. Good to have you all back. I want to get into the podcast, y'all. It just started. We're going to do that after we talk Jumanji. But first, before I say hello to Roxy and Dorina, Steph Sabra, you are back from a whirlwind vacation that literally took you to all parts of the globe.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm back. It doesn't feel like it. But I was texted Mark when I was away. I was like, guess what, Mark? I am now drinking beer. So now our friendship can really excel to the next level as we have a beer together, hopefully after this Jumanji episode.
That's right. We are shifting into third gear, and we'll have the Uber driver do that, because we're going to be drinking some brewskis because Steph is on board. Dorina, you and I have shared many an adult beverage. You prefer the mezcal, tequila.
I do, Mark, but I do enjoy the IPA, as you know, because we both like very bitter things, like our adult, very bitter souls. But I think we're bitter inside, but towards the world, we're happy, right?
Every time I see you, I know you want to have this dark soul, and I believe that it's there, and I do not want to be cursed in any way, but you are a bright light in a cruel world, as is Roxy Stryer. Roxy, one of the greatest backgrounds, and a deserving one for you, because you are our Hollywood star.
Yeah, but it just says, it says Hollywood. I messed up. I'm here in Hollywood, and that feels like my life. Here I am, the queen of Hollywood.
Yeah,
it's Hollywood adjacent. So I'm thrilled to talk to y'all about Jumanji, because it seems like this was a movie that a lot of people's childhood centered around. I mean, we loved Robin Williams as an actor, as a comedian. He was great in Aladdin, but then Jumanji comes along, and it just sort of felt like, oh man, this is like a great kids' 90s movies. 52% rotten on the tomato meter. I'm going to kick it back to you first, Rox. Is that score low? Is that too high? Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong about Jumanji?
It just makes you question what happened. Like, how did we possibly, as a society, get it that wrong this time? Mm-hmm. Rotten Tomatoes is super wrong on this one, because I don't know anybody who thinks that this movie isn't great. And I'm sure somebody listening right now is like, well, me, I'm the one person. Fine, go have fun with yourself, because the rest of us love this movie. Rotten Tomatoes is really wrong about this. This should be in the, I want to say in the 90s. I mean, this is a really, really solid childhood movie that definitely, y'all got this wrong.
Roxy's giving it all the way to the 90s. How about you, Dorina? How do you see Jumanji and the tomato meter?
Well, I think it's actually better than most adventure family movies nowadays. I think for the 90s specifically, I remember being a 13-year-old child in the theater enjoying the crap out of this, being scared and thrilled, not as scared as Steph Sabra, obviously, because she thinks this is a horror movie. It's not Steph, but I'm glad you think so. But it's so much fun. It's so exciting. The cast is fantastic. Every single ingredient to this movie should have it at least in the 80%. Like, I don't know what happened. 50%, way too low. Rotten Tomatoes is wrong.
52% of the tomato meter, it's rotten according to that. What does Steph Sabra say about Rotten Tomatoes? Are they wrong about, I guess, one of your childhood horror movies?
Yeah, I love Rotten Tomatoes, but this score disgusts me, not to pull the legend or the dead legend card. But out of respect for Robin Williams and the joy he spread specifically in this movie, but everything he does or did, why would this be this low? Like, this makes me sad, because there's going to be kids who look up this movie saying, like, old classics I should watch. And then they're going to go on Rotten Tomatoes, and then they're going to be like, should I watch it? And it's like, of course you should watch it, because like Dorina's saying, this is one of the greatest horror children films of all time. And it's like a ride from start to finish. A great ride. Scary ride.
It's so funny, because recently we were talking about the 1982 movie Annie with our good friend Alicia Malone. And it's sort of like similar, where you have like a lot of darkness in a children's movie. You get some of that in Jumanji. And the two recent Jumanji films with Kevin Hart and The Rock and all of them, those are like fresh on the tomato meter and on the audience score. So, you know, our hope here, I guess, because I think Rotten Tomatoes is wrong too, I think this should at least be a fresh movie. If you want to keep it in the 60s, fine. But I think it deserves to be fresh. For nothing else, because of what Steph said, out of respect for the late, great Robin Williams. If we have time, I'll tell you my Robin Williams story. If not, we'll kick it to another day, because we have a lot more Robin Williams movies to discuss on Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. But right now, we turn it over to our good friend Tim Ryan. He's our expert review curation manager here at Rotten Tomatoes, and he's going to tell us what the critics were saying, wrongly so according to the World Girls, at the time of Jumanji's release. Tim, take us back to 1995.
With Tim. Occasionally people will tell me that they're bummed out that one of their favorite movies from their childhood is a low score on Rotten Tomatoes. And my take on that is, critics usually watch a movie once before reviewing it, and they generally have no idea whether it'll be embraced or forgotten in the future. My other take is, you should never have any shame if you love a movie, or if you have a happy memory of watching a movie as a kid. Those formative experiences help you to fall in love with movies in the first place. For a decent number of people of a certain age, Jumanji was a formative cinematic experience. As Andre Meadows of Black Nerd Comedy said in a retrospective review, it was totally one of those 90s movies specifically made for 90s kids. But at the time of its release, by and large, the critical opinion on Jumanji was that it took the bare bones of Chris Van Allsburg's wonderful book and turned it into a special effects extravaganza, and that, while those effects were admittedly pretty impressive, too often they pushed the human characters off to the side. Jumanji is rotten at 52% with 46 reviews, and it has a 62% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a Rotten review, Rita Kempley of the Washington Post wrote, "The technology both overwhelms the human cast and stalls the narrative drive. Even William's manic energy finally flags." However, in a fresh review, Ron Yamauchi of Vancouver's Georgia Strait wrote, "As he did with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, director Joe Johnston successfully juggles frenetic special effects action with gentle character moments." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "A feast for the eyes with a somewhat malnourished plot, Jumanji is an underachieving adventure that still offers a decent amount of fun for the whole family." So that's Jumanji. Let's kick it back to Mark. The only way you'll be able to escape the wild chaos of this podcast is if you yell Jumanji at the end. Back to you, folks.
I don't even know if that one's going to get me out alive here, Tim. And I guess right now I can just shoehorn in our synopsis about Jumanji. If you don't know Jumanji, you discover a board game. It's not a video game like in the updated versions. It's a board game that these kids discover in an attic somewhere, and they play it. And wouldn't you know it, it's more than a game you play. It's an immersive experience where it's dangerous and you can be trapped in there for years, such as the case with Robin Williams' character, who's been in there for 26 years. He went missing as a child. His parents eventually just, I mean, we don't know where he is. He's gone, and then his parents pass away, and then he's back, and we're trying to rectify a lot of things, but we also need Bonnie Hunt's character Sarah to help us solve this mystery, get Robin free, and get everybody out alive of this really, really scary board game. So with that setting the table, let's get to movie talk for Jumanji. Darina, nothing gives me greater pride than to realize that you and I are two of the more attractive folks that did see this film in a theater when we were kids. So when you first saw this, was this like a movie that you had like circled and you're like, I want to go see, that's the one I want to go see? Did you just walk into the theater because it was movie day? What was your relationship with Jumanji as you walked into that theater for the first time?
Well, Mark, I had already developed a relationship with Lady Kirsten Dunst, because she had just won an Oscar as a child for Interview with the Vampire. And obviously a huge fan of that movie because I'm the goth world girl. And I was very excited to see this because I'm also worship Robin Williams as a child, right? So any Robin Williams movie that was out, I was going to go see it. And my family, my mom and my brother were definitely huge movie lovers like myself. We sat there with our popcorn and the hot dogs and sandwiches and Mexican snacks that we brought into the theater, obviously. And we enjoyed the crap out of this. Like, I was already hyped as a 13-year-old girl. And this, to quote the wrong critic that Tim read, this movie did not underachieve. It impressed us so much as a family because it looked amazing for the time. Like, the effects were totally groundbreaking. It had a team of people like Ken Ralston from Death Becomes Her, Tom Woodruff Jr., aliens, like Alec Gillis, who's famous for animatronics from Tremors. Like, I was like, this was a Darina movie. I was so excited. It had horror elements. It had a bunch of cool effects, CG mixed with actual practical effects, which is my jam. And I tend to miss a lot in these movies. And of course, it had David Alan Grier, which was, you know, he's like the funniest guy. I love that guy.
Love me some David Alan Grier. And I was a big fan of In Living Color. Roxy, Jumanji, when did you first stumble upon Jumanji, and what was your gateway into it? Was it the kids playing a game? Was it you loved Robin Williams? How'd you get in there?
I remember watching this on VHS for the first time. We had a room in the house that just had a very boxy TV in it and a mattress on the floor. And my brother and I used to sit on the mattress, and I remember we watched this movie and a movie that certainly did not hold up as well, The Indian in the Cupboard. We would watch those two movies back to back. One of those I stand by, the other I do not. And he showed this movie to me for the first time. I believe he saw it in theaters. And then when it came out on VHS, he convinced the fam to purchase it. And we loved this one. It was one of the only ones that both him and I agreed on. We were only 2 years apart, but when you're kids, that is a world of difference. And this was one of the only, I'm going to say there were five movies that we could both be like, all right, that's what we're doing tonight. We must have watched Jumanji like 20 times.
Are you saying that it's not a finished room if it just has a TV and a mattress in there? If that's the case, I got some redecorating to do.
I don't know. I asked my parents about this a while ago. Why do we have a room with just a mattress on the ground? There was no sheet on the mattress. It was just a mattress on the ground. And they were like, it was very versatile. We did a lot of things with that room. So I don't know. Just for you interior designers out there, something to think about.
You can do a lot with a mattress and a TV. You can do a whole lot. Steph, you were introduced to Jumanji. Was it a family member twisting your arm like Roxy? How did you first come upon this game slash movie?
I don't remember the moment of inception perfectly, but I do know, similar to Roxy, there was two movies that me, my brother, and my sister would watch, and we loved so much. And it wasn't Robin Williams, who we loved, as like that took longer in my life to realize what a legend he was. It was Jonathan Hyde, because in Richie Rich, he's Cadbury and a legendary character. And in Jumanji's, obviously the dad and the Van Hyde, the crazy guy who comes out of the portal. But so those two movies were just like such great rides for me. And I loved them both. But Jumanji was genuinely scary. And then upon rewatch, it was still scary. At no point when I'm watching this film do I think everyone's going to make it out alive. And I think that's a huge indicator of it being a horror film. And the characters make dumb mistakes like a horror movie, but you're there for it. And you actually, there's moments of conversation, like the dialogue is really good still. Sometimes when you rewatch 90s movies, you're like, ugh, it's a little awkward. But this one, I'm like, I love this movie just the same as I did when I was a kid. And somehow I'm just as scared.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I found myself really gravitating towards the emotional aspect of this movie when I was rewatching it earlier this week. And so my favorite scene in the movie, going into it, I was like, I remember the stampede scene when the rhino just like crushes a car, how awesome that looked on the big screen. But it was a very different moment upon rewatching it that got me as an adult. But the connective tissue is there between like an Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom from the 80s, where kids were in peril. And then you have like maybe Guillermo del Toro, who's a great horror filmmaker, who made something like Pan's Labyrinth, where, again, you fear for how are these children going to handle all of these events. And then sandwiched in between those two decades would be something like Jumanji. And so if we get into the movie itself, which is directed by Joe Johnston, and I point that out because he's done a lot of movies that people just loved from their childhood. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. He did. He directed The Rocketeer, The Pagemaster, and he did Captain America, The First Avenger, you know? So The guy clearly has a lot of game. Steph, what's the scene for you that you say, see, that's why not only I love Jumanji, but why everybody should love Jumanji, but maybe it's a little too scary for the little tykes?
I would say, okay, it's kind of a two-parter. It's when Robin Williams' character first goes into the portal, and then right when he comes out, the first person out of there is this man with a gun chasing him. And it's like, how do you make it out of that? And I just, every time I'm like, okay, he's gonna be murdered right on site. He makes it back to his house. He's gonna die. He doesn't die. Spoiler alert. But I really thought he was gonna die. Like, this guy's coming at him. Then he goes to buy a gun because I guess that's easy to do in this great country. Instantly, like, it knows it's a, yeah, I don't know. It's just scary. This guy's chasing this guy, these kids with a gun. I was like, whoa.
Rox, it really sets the tone because, like, Jumanji, you would think that the movie would steer you towards wanting to play this game. At no point watching this movie did I ever want to touch a game like that. I looked at it like a Ouija board where I'm like, just get it out of my sight, get it out of my house. I do not want to deal with this game. But what was it about the movie that locked you in? What was the scene that you and your brother on that mattress with no sheet just kept watching over and over again?
There were two moments that really stood out for me. The first one is so small that I, even upon rewatching it, I was waiting for it because I was like, please tell me I didn't make this moment up. This has to be a real moment. This is so much about my childhood. I'm putting a lot of weight on this. And it's when Robin Williams says to go get the axe. And as a monkey, the boy goes to get the axe and he grabs the axe to open up the thing, and he's got the axe in his hand and he realizes it. It's like when somebody says, put on your sunglasses, and you search for like an hour and they're on top of your head. I loved that moment as a kid so much. I don't even remember that. Oh my, it's such a small moment.
He even looks at the camera. It's great.
Yeah. Like, I just remember I used to laugh so hard because that is the kid humor in here that I was just like, that's what happens. You went to the axe is in your hand and you were trying to get the axe. It's the funniest thing. But then as an adult for me, I think my favorite moment is when Robin Williams is stuck in the floor. It's just the coolest to look at. And I think that, like, all of us feel when you're watching that, that's where it is a little bit of a horror movie. I won't give Steph the satisfaction of saying that this is a horror movie, but if there are horror movie elements, it's when, like, you can't use your hands. You can't move. You are stuck. And I don't want to see what that would look like if there was death by floor. I don't know. Is that like by a million splinters? I mean, how do you really, what really happens? That's part two.
That's pretty terrifying to think about, the many different ways that you could die in Jumanji. And if you're in Jumanji, Darina, you want to go out like a champ. Like, you want to be facing a rhinoceros head to head. You don't want to just be, hey, how'd you die? How'd you get up into heaven? Oh, I was stuck in a floor for all eternity, so couldn't quite pull it out. What's the, is it the floor scene for you? Is it some of the relationships in the movie? What's the scene for Darina now?
Well, there's a couple. The really bizarre one that I still think is so bizarre, but I love it. And I don't think any of you noticed this because you're not Mexican, but my Mexican family notices in the theater, was when Van Pelt, who's the hunter, who also plays the dad, goes into a gun store and buys a gun. And the entire scene, the Mexican national anthem is playing in the background. Even though they're in the U.S., it is so random. But obviously, everybody in the Mexican theater was like, yeah, you know, it was like, esto, huevo, abuelita de Batman.
What can I do for you?
What gross are these?
You know, they stopped making these in 1903.
Damn. I shall need a replacement weapon.
Well, there's a waiting period, and you'll have to fill out these. Or I could fill these out. Louise.
So that was a fun one, but I love all the action scenes. Like, unlike Steph, I love anything that's gory, and I love when people are in the actual movie are scared. But there's a really sweet moment, thanks to the great Robin Williams, where he's kind of having a moment with the little boy, and he's a monkey, and I think he has his tail stuck in his pants, and he's like helping him like get it out. But at first he's very cold with him, and then he says, "I'm sorry, 26 years buried in the deepest, darkest jungle, and I still became my father." Right. So that's a really cool human moment that we had there, thanks to the great Robin Williams, of where you're in a crazy adventure movie that actually has this like big heart element to it. So I love that.
I warned you about this, Peter. No, you wanted to play the game. What are you crying? You don't cry, all right? You keep your chin up. Come on, keep your chin up. Crying never helped anybody do anything, okay? You have a problem? You face it like a man.
Hey, I'm sorry.
26 years buried in the deepest, darkest jungle, and I still became my father.
Yeah, and that was art imitating life a little bit, because that poor kid, Bradley Pierce, played Peter, and he was in the makeup chair for, you know, hours, getting all that makeup on, and he was interviewed about it, and he said that Robin Williams would come into the trailer and just sit next to him the entire time, because Robin had just come off of filming Mrs. Doubtfire, where he was going through a lot of extensive makeup. And so he was like teaching Bradley like meditation techniques, just like how to, you know, stay still and calm your mind and try to not get too restless. And it's like, just a guy like that who could just be chilling in his trailer doing, like, I would be napping if I was the star of that movie when it's not my time to shine. I don't care about kids. I'm taking a nap. He is in there supporting him. And ironically, y'all know me. There's very few things that can get me like emotionally to show him on the outside, but it's the end when we get to reunite. The reuniting of a family, I was like, oh my God, why is this making me feel things? And I welled up a little bit. It's because we saw the thing, and it was him and his father particularly, they were just like ships passing in the night for like the last 26 years, ever since they discovered the board game. And so just to see it have that sort of ending, I was like, it made me feel so good. And the fact that we no longer have Robin in our lives as a current person, it warmed my heart. It made me miss him, but I was feeling a lot of feels. And this is from the same guy who will bawl watching Night of the Museum 3 at the end because Robin Williams plays Teddy Roosevelt, and the movie was released after Robin had passed away. And there's a scene at the end where he's talking to Ben Stiller's, you know, manager character. And it's almost like he's saying goodbye to him, but he's also saying goodbye to us. And so Robin Williams has one of those, I don't know how he does it, but he's able to tug at my heartstrings like nobody else. And I think part of that, Steph, is to your point, where the tone of this film is scary. And there is a lot of horrifying elements, especially for kids in here. Do you think that sort of helps the movie in a way, like stick with you long after you stop watching it for the first time, long after you've left the theater? You keep thinking about it because we felt like we were in real serious danger.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. More than a lot of movies that I watched when I was a kid, this one really stuck with me because it scared me just enough where I still had fun watching it. But you know that scene where Alan Parrish is talking to the little kid? He just got out and he's like disheveled, unshaved, like wearing palm tree hat. Whatever that look was. And he's like, you haven't even seen the things I've seen, only in your nightmares.
You think monkeys, mosquitoes, and lions are bad? That's just the beginning. I've seen things you've only seen in your nightmares. Things you can't even imagine. Things you can't even see. There are things that haunt you in the night. Then something screams. Then you hear them eating, and you hope to God that you're not deserted. Afraid? You don't even know what afraid is.
I was like, oh my God, it's getting real right now. Are we going to give this man some support? So yes, those are the moments where that's like Oscar worthy Robin Williams coming through in a children's movie, but just elevating it, where if someone else said that line, like, no shade to some of the new adventure type movies we've seen, the ones that resemble games or rides. I always know it's a ride or a game that's really, really made for children. But Jumanji feels like it hit the sweet spot of both like adult and kid fun and scary.
Yeah, Darina, it's an essential part of a lot of people's childhood. And I think that one of the reasons is because it's lasted with us so long, because it had such a visceral impact the first time we saw it, when maybe we weren't like, you know, adult. Even you and I watching that in a theater, it's like, oh my God, this is scary, but it feels real. And I'm glad everything worked out okay. But there's a lot of scary crap, like the monkeys themselves, like getting sucked, the bats in that movie, the monsoon. There's a lot of scary shit.
I mean, scary, I guess, to a kid and to Steph, but for the 90s, for sure. I mean, it's similar to the feeling that we all got watching Jurassic Park for the first time in the theater, right? Where you're stressed out, but you're having fun at the same time, kind of like living life and experiencing it. But I do have to say, like, there's so many stressful parts specifically, but also funny in those stressful moments. Like, obviously the monkeys riding the motorcycle is one of my favorites because it's so stupid, but also the stampede. I mean, there's that rhino at the end that's just like struggling to catch up to the stampede, and I think that's the most relatable rhino on screen.
Wheezy, I believe. And Roxy, I was reading some research that the great Mark Hoffmeyer did for us about this movie, and apparently that was just because the visual effects team, they couldn't get the rhino to move any faster and make it feel as realistic as it was. And so it was just a slow moving rhino, but it sort of endeared the rhinoceros to me more. Like if it was just the most athletic rhinoceros ever, I don't think I would have responded to him, Roxy.
No, super relatable. That rhino was the most relatable character in the whole film. I'm with you guys. Like we've all been that rhino before, and that's okay. It's okay to be the rhino. That's the point of the film. I think that it actually is a scarier movie as an adult, though, because your guys' mind starts to wander too, right? Like you are sitting there thinking, what were those 20 plus years? Like, how are you still here? Are you okay? Like, I feel like Therapist Rocks kicks in and is like, tell me what that was like for you, Robin. What was that like for you?
Yeah.
And the actual, like, mental fear of being stuck for that long. As a kid, I don't remember being afraid of this. I remember thinking it was so fun. I remember thinking those That's spiders, because they don't look like real spiders. They look like big, creepy crawlers. I remember thinking that would have been like, oh, cool, you take the axe, you chop the spider, like video gamey. But as an adult, it's a lot scarier. Not horror, but scarier.
Also, to add to Roxy's point, what about Bunny Hunt's character? She has to deal with the 26 years of nobody believing her that she saw this kid get sucked into a board game.
Yeah.
That is insane.
She doesn't even believe herself. She, when you hear her on the phone with her therapist, she's like, talk me off a ledge. He's sitting right here. I see him. And you just, like that. I have memories like that. I'm sure you guys do too as a kid where you're like, did I make my whole life up? Did this actually happen? And to think that you saw something that everybody around you tells you you're crazy, that's horror.
Are we mad at her a little bit though?
That she didn't roll the die again?
Yeah, she just ran and never looked back.
But as a child, Steph, you would have run too. Admit it.
She was a
kid,
bro.
It's giving Evan Hansen vibes.
Here's the thing. I feel like I would have run initially. I'm not going to say that, oh, yeah, I would have. I would have been the hero in that moment. But, you know, I might have ran. And then as I got a little older, I might have, like, gotten a gym membership. And I might have, like, hired a trainer and been like, hey, like, a year from today, I'm rolling the dice. And I'm going back in there after my friend. Like, I am getting in shape. You're getting in shape for the draft. Cool. I'm going in shape to go to the jungle in a board game to rescue Robin Williams. Like, that's a pretty... you could also like hire special forces maybe to play the game with you because then they could come in. So
exactly.
I think there's workarounds. You might have experimented within that 26 years, but I do give her props for she clearly made her decision. Like I'm never going back to, I'm never going to revisit this. And the kids were able to convince her, hey, Sarah, we kind of need you like right now.
I mean, kind of. We totally tricked her into it. She won't roll the dice. And Robin Williams is like, oh, boom, there, you did it. That's you rolling it. Who are we really mad at? It can't be Robin Williams.
Even,
but
like,
it's Robin
can't
Williams.
Be Robin Williams, yeah.
But the way she rolled the dice the first time as a child, I know we shouldn't blame children for stupid mistakes, but she was like, I'm not playing games. I haven't played games in 10 years. And she just drops the dice. I'm like, you just played the die. You just played the die, Sarah. And now you left your friend. But we forgive her. It was full circle. They needed to grow together.
Exactly, Steph. See, everybody was at fault, but every single character, there was growth throughout the movie. And that's important and not seen as much in family movies, I think.
And then you look at the special effects, the visual effects aspect of this movie, because, Dorina, as you pointed out, there's some geniuses behind the scenes here. And some of it did build upon what we saw in Jurassic Park a couple of years earlier. And the director, Joe Johnston, I love bringing him up because he's made some of our childhood favorite movies. And he also worked on both of those Ewoks made for TV movies, the Caravan
That's
of
right.
Courage and Battle for Endor. Even before that, Joe Johnston is credited with the design of some little green Muppet named Yoda. He was sort of, you know, kind of had that iteration of Yoda as this little green thing that doesn't look like a Jedi, but he can still make your X-Wing come out of the swamp when you really need it.
Joe Johnston hero he is.
I didn't know if she'd do it. I didn't want to prompt her, but Roxy is famous for having a great Yoda impression. And
excellent.
thank you for that, Rox. That means
so
a lot.
Well. Yeah. That wasn't for you. That was for Joe Johnston, okay? That was for Joe. Joe.
It's developed from sounding like Gollum meets Pee-wee, but now it's actually getting better, Roxy. I have to give you props.
I think it's really spot on, and you guys are all gaslighting me the way that we gaslit Sarah in for 20 something years when she thought that she watched somebody disappear. That's what's happening here.
Yeah, have the force.
Yeah.
Can you sit this? Can you sit kids down now in front of this movie, in front of this Jumanji, and you think they'd respond to it? Do the effects hold up in that sense? Because for us, we're always going to remember, I think, the first time we saw it and it felt so believable to us. Do you think that we can do that with kids of today?
I think if the kid's smart, they'll like it.
I don't know. I unfortunately have to spend a lot of time with the youth because I'm the oldest cousin out of like a crop of 40 little kids.
Wow.
And they're...
No wonder you drink beer.
I love them, but they're very pretentious, you know? Like, they know a lot. They're smart. And so I think that if they just let the ride take them, they would really enjoy it because it does hold up in so many ways. But I could see them being like, that CGI doesn't even look real, like mid-movie. And then they take themselves out of it. But I think there's a big group that would still love it.
Yeah, and you have the Jumanji, the two more recent ones. You have Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle and the mm-hmm. Next Level. And I enjoyed both those movies fine. I really did. And I thought that they approached those two films the right way to not tread over, to not rhino stomp the previous Jumanji. And Dwayne Johnson is on record as saying, like, he didn't want it to be a remake. He wanted it to be a continuation because he wanted to honor the legacy of Robin Williams. Do we feel like that those two movies achieve that? That they're actually nice companion pieces to the original? I'll start with you, Dorina.
I mean, I only saw the first one. I think it's a fun movie. It just, to me, maybe because I'm more of Mark's age, it doesn't hold up to the same heart that the original Jumanji had. And that could just be because we're missing Robin Williams, right? Like, I love the original cast so much. I love Bunny Hunt. I miss her. Kirsten Dunst. Like, I think it's just a slightly different movie that was made for modern times. And I still also miss a lot of the practical effects and the animatronics.
Yeah, they made a great point in sort of making this movie that they wanted to take the practical effects as far as they could. So make the practical effects sort of the groundwork and then just put the VFX on top of it. And it seems like, you know, a lot of movies today for a myriad different reasons that I'm sure are noble and they want to tell the story that they want to tell. But it seems like sometimes they do just rely on visual effects. But we're getting back to a world where you do see some more practical stuff than you used to. So that gives me some hope for the future of movies like this. Roxy, do you appreciate what the new Jumanji films are bringing, that they honor the legacy of the original? They certainly make money. They are both like within shouting distance of $1 billion worldwide.
I think that they're excellent. I think the entire Jumanji franchise hits it out of the park because that's what, if you're going to do a reboot or a sequel, whatever we want to call it when it's that far after, if you're going to do that, then you need to be true to the story. You need to be true to the heart of it, but you should also take your creative liberties. And I feel like tonally, they are very different. The characters, we got really fun new characters. Do I love them as much as I love the OG 85 Jumanji? No, of course not, because what year was it? Did I make up those 85?
95.
Yeah, I was like, no, that's not right. I was born when this came out. 95 Jumanji? She's here, I swear. Do I love it as much as I love the 95 Jumanji? No, I would never, because that would be sacrilegious. You know, that would be horrible to the inner child in me. But did I think that they were really fun watches, both the first and the second, which was actually very similar to the first, but I didn't care because it's fun enough that I would sit down and watch it again. They were all so lovely. Like, they were funny. They were laugh out loud funny, and they have charismatic actors in them as well. Nobody is Robin Williams. But if we're going to start to pick people who can really bring your attention to the screen, then yeah, The Rock's a pretty good one. Kevin Hart's a pretty good. We've got some pretty good ones there.
Yeah, Jack Black, Karen Gillan. It's a great cast and they're fun to watch. But Steph, you pointed out earlier that even when you first saw this Jumanji, the OG, it wasn't like you weren't aware of Robin Williams as like the person that you would come to know and love. I'm assuming we all love Robin Williams here. So I just want to ask y'all, what was your entry point into not just knowing who he was, but holding him as a beloved figure in your world?
Do you want us to start crying? Is that what you want, Mark?
I mean, it'll work for me. So, okay.
I mean, look, when I'm probably like you where I first saw him in Mork and Mindy. right? Like in reruns, right? So I saw him and I just thought he was funny and I kept saying Nanu, 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 and I loved him. But the first movie that like actually made me cry as a kid was Mrs. Doubtfire, because my parents got divorced when I was 5. So I saw that as a young child, and it was so impressionable for me, like at the end where he does the speech as Mrs. Doubtfire on the TV, and she tells, you know, it's not your fault. It's going to be okay. I was just like, as a little Dorina, it was a whole thing. So ever since then, I've loved that man, and I've seen every single one of his movies.
I love that they didn't get back together at the end of Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes.
I thought that was a really important thing because it just feels like Chris Columbus or the team knew a lot of kids are going to be watching this movie. This is going to be a big hit. Let's not build up false hope for all of those kids from divorced parents. Let's not make them all think that all dad has to do is dress up like a woman and everything will be fine and they're going to get back together. I actually didn't come across his Mork and Mindy work first. My first intro to Robin Williams was Good Morning Vietnam, and I just thought it was funny watching this guy in the military just yelling and saying whatever he wanted to on the radio. And then I went to a Monday Night Football game where we lost to the Cowboys. And I was in like fifth grade, and it was so late by the time we got back, my mom let me sleep in from school the next day. That's how cool my parents were. And so I woke up at like noon and I'm thinking, oh, sweet, I got the whole day off. And she's like, no, you're getting dressed and you're going to school. But first you can watch the rest of Mork and Mindy. And I'm like, what the hell's Mork and Mindy? And then she's like, you've never heard, it's young Robin Williams. And I watched it and I was just like, this guy, there's nothing this guy can't do. Steph, your first time realizing the genius that was Sir Williams.
I don't want to say it was flubber, but it might have been flubber.
We'll take flubber.
I think that movie hit really hard for me, something about it. Maybe it's because the like same time as Nickelodeon Slime. We just loved that. Our generation loved that. But Mrs. Doubtfire was another one that I feel like always was playing on TV and I never got sick of watching it. And I think the more it was kind of like a slow burn for me. But then the more I fell in love with comedy and comedic actors, the more I started to realize how rare he was, because a lot of comedians can't break out of just being funny and it's hard to take them serious. And I think Kevin Hart is starting to do it now. The Rock's not, or Dwayne Johnson's not a comedian, but he does like a lot of comedic movies. And to me, it's hard to look at them as serious actors too. And I think they need like separate entities to showcase each. It's not usually in one movie, but Robin Williams in one movie could be serious and funny and the same character in a way that not really anyone else could do it. So it was just like the more and more I kept watching it, him, and then realizing his voice was in Aladdin. I didn't know that until like 10 years after I watched Aladdin. It's just like, what can't this guy do?
Steph, you might have to stay parked there and we'll just do another episode right after this, because unfortunately Flubber, 24% on the TV.
No! Come on!
Yeah. And the Flubber audience score is only 33%. So that, producing Lucy, make a note. We're probably talking about Flubber at some point in the future.
No soul. No soul.
Roxy, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Aladdin was your intro, was your gateway to Robin.
I think probably, but obviously being from Boston, there's one that is like my most memorable. And of course, it's Good Will Hunting. when Dorina said, it's not your fault, speaking about Mrs. Doubtfire, of course, that it almost brings you to tears thinking about It's Not Your Fault on repeat to Will. And this was the first, this is true. The movie came out in 97. I was probably 3 years after that. I was about 10 years old. I had an audition. And what I auditioned with was his entire You Don't Know About Real Loss, because that only occurs when you love something more than you love yourself. And I doubt you have ever dared to love anybody that much speech.
Yeah.
I was 10. And that was the monologue I decided to perform, because he meant everything to me. Like, this was.
Is there tape of this? Is there video evidence of this?
I got to find something. I mean, I at one point I knew every single word to the entire movie. But Robin Williams' character in that movie is the like soft place to land. He is the, even though he's got a little edge to him, he is the voice of reason. He is the person that you need in your life to explain things to you and to make you more of a human and less of a cold-hearted brat. And I needed Robin Williams in so many different areas of my life, and he always delivered. I love this man so much.
forever and always.
So let's take this opportunity to talk a little bit about Bitch Out of Water, but I want to keep it in the world of Jumanji. So y'all's new podcast endeavor is you relating life experiences that you've had. And it can be some heavy stuff. It can be lifestyle choices. It can be travels. It could be really anything that you have experienced and left a mark on you. How would the World Girls handle having either Alan, Robin Williams' character, or Sarah, Bonnie Hunt's character, and all of the, I imagine, PTSD that they have from this board game experience? It feels like Bitch Out of Water would be the perfect podcast for them to really talk about what happened.
I mean, look, Bitch Out of Water is really, the whole point of the World Girls is that we give things a whirl. Right. And so we give fun things a whirl, like going to Disneyland and creating bottle rockets and celebrating holidays like Day of the Dead. But in this podcast, we talk about human experiences. Right. And all kinds of things like Steph being mixed and me being polyamorous and Roxy talking about grief and her mom dying. And so this is really where we talk about our trauma and our, you know, PTSD from all of life's amazing, joyful, as well as bitter experiences, all of the joy and the pain and the suffering. So I think that I would love it if somehow in some other dimension we could interview the entire cast of Jumanji.
And make them feel a little bit better about the things they've going through.
Exactly.
And also kind of like Jumanji, how maybe Steph looks at it like a horror movie, but sometimes for me, it's more of a comedy. This is the classic line that Steph says anytime we're thinking about the new podcast episodes we're going to do. She's like, but we're going to make it funny, right? Because we don't like to just talk about the trauma without the laughter. So I feel like Jumanji, it would be a very similar tone.
Yeah. We'd be like, remember you almost died? Ha ha! Like, it'd be such a fun conversation with them.
But that's why y'all are the perfect three folks that I know that I've ever met to do an endeavor like this, is because you have heavy life experiences, but you're always able to inject humor into it. And that's how we cope with this stuff. That's how I imagine, Alan's parents that's how these kids, when they're dealing with stuff, because these kids lost their parents. And, you know, at least at the beginning of the movie, we get to rectify some stuff towards the course of the end, but it's like there's a lot of stuff going on here. And so it's one of those things. It's an outlet that we all need. And maybe that's why this version of Jumanji speaks to all of us in our childhood and in our adulthood, is that there's something in there for everyone, and it feels real and it feels emotional and it grabs you and it doesn't let go. But the World Girls, do the World Girls, and y'all can answer this individually if you want to, or as a collective, I don't care. Do the World Girls, you're at home and you're digging around your attic and you find the board game Jumanji. Do you open it? Do you roll the dice?
100% yes. But these two, I can't even get them to do a Ouija board with me right now. They're like true believers in whatever's out there, but I'm making them play. I have forced them to play Jumanji. This is something that I'm going to make happen and plant spiders all over the place and get a lion.
Look, I will tape my fists. I'll tape my hands and I'll tape 40s to them. I'll be like Edward Scissorhands with the 40s and not participate. You can't get me to roll a die. I'm not messing with the spirits. I like the spirits. I come in peace. I'm not going to wake you up. I'm not rolling die, Roxy. That's all you.
Look, but here's the thing, though. We're talking about, you know, both joy and loss in Jumanji. And we haven't talked about the great James Horner, by the way, who's also passed away and composed the amazing score to this movie. But if somehow we got to reunite with like James Horner and Robin Williams and all these people, Steph, would you play Jumanji?
If there was a guarantee, I wouldn't die or be like mutilated by some animal.
There's no guarantee ever in life, Steph. Here's what I'm thinking. We hold her down. We tickle torture her. We put the dye in her mouth and then we poke her stomach so she just spit it out and roll.
That counts as a roll, Steph.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think everyone listening, you just heard Roxy's origin villain story, because that was evil.
Do it for the World Girls. Do you understand or not? That's the assignment.
I was in on Ticklish a little bit, but it's like, I don't know. She also, you got to remember, she has two 40s duct taped to her hands. And I'm a big fan of beer grip stuff, so I don't want to mess with that. We can let her sit this one out. As I said about Ouija boards in my special, I don't believe in it, but I don't not believe in it. Get it away from my house. Closing up shop here. I did get a chance. The first, I've actually gotten to hang out with Robin Williams a few times. And every time it was just like, you wake up the next day and you're like, did that really happen? First time I ever met him, Saturday night before the Oscars at the Comedy Store. He came in to pop in on stage and in the original room. And I was an employee and he comes in. I'm the first one that he sees as he comes through that front curtain. Y'all have been through that way in the original room before. And he comes in and I'm just like, oh, hey, Robin, I'm Mark. I just started working here. And he said, and he said, I think he said something like, and which department are you? And I said, I just answer phones right now. And so he pantomimed without missing a beat, holds a phone up to his ear. And he said, oh, I still have no idea what the fuck I'm doing yet. And and then he gave me a big hug. And then he went on stage to a standing ovation and killed for 20 minutes, got off stage, another standing ovation. And we got to chew it up in the back for a little bit. And it's one of the one of the great memories of a great man that I will always cherish. So with that, that closes up our mailbag. Actually, that's going to open the mailbag. We get to open the mailbag now if Brian has the music. I love this guy. I wish that I had more teachers like Alex Hellier because he has a year 8 student and it's student X. We're not going to name the student, but year 8 student X writes, Dear Rotten Tomatoes, I am outraged at the score of this movie masterpiece, the fantastic film, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. This movie has it all, action, comedy, pirates, history, and many more fascinating topics. I would argue it's much funnier than the first movie in the series. Now, I personally believe it is so good because it has a great and recognizable villain, ship, and characters, interesting lore, the funniest movie moments, and great quotable lines. Yes, I agree, it's not the best movie ever, and it's not a 100% score-worthy film because it may be long. The start is not as good as the other movies in the series, and sometimes it gets boring, but that does not deserve a 53%. But in general, you should give it a chance and watch it with a clear and open mind with its funny bits and quotes, but maybe watch the first movie before watching the second from Student X. So thank you so much, Student X. That was a very well thought out argument for Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. I have to admit, ladies, I can't remember what happens in this one versus the other one. Any Dead Man's Chest fans out there?
I am. I love the first two Pirates of the Caribbean. I think they're both excellent films, and I agree with this Alex person. Good job, Alex.
Is this written by an eighth grader?
I believe year 8 is eighth grade, yeah, and Alex is the professor, so he's doing a great job teaching his pupils.
What are you, a genius? What? That was so well said. I'm going to have to revisit this movie because of you.
That was very, very well done. Roxy, your thoughts on Pirates of the Caribbean?
I think I loved this one, too. I think that I'm with you, D, that the first two were, they totally slapped. So I might need to do a rewatch of this, but especially just to look at, I mean, Keira Knightley, Orlando Bloom, and Johnny Depp, it wasn't too shabby back in the day. So.
Yeah, Keira Knightley and Orlando Bloom, they're not going to have ugly children in that movie.
No.
And their children would probably be bold and roll the dice, unlike certain other people that are currently present playing the game Jumanji. So that is going to do it for us here today on just that episode where I knew my job was going to be easy, but y'all made it even more simple for me to just set you up. And we just are off in a world of pure imagination thanks to the World Girls, who I love dearly. Let's talk a little bit more and let all the kids know where they can find the World Girls Empire in general. And then this new podcast offshoot, Bitch Out of Water. Have at it.
I'm going to let Roxy do it because she's the longest running host here.
Oh, great. The World Girls. We have a website, so we keep it nice and easy for you guys. TheWorldGirls.com. If you want to find our podcast, TheWorldGirls.com/podcast. It's everywhere that podcasts are, Apple, Spotify, and it's called Bitch Out of Water. I don't know if we made your job super simple, Mark, because we made you say bitch like 15 times this episode. But if you've ever felt like a fish out of water, Bitch Out of Water is for you. Plus, we are live every Wednesday and Sunday nights on YouTube.com/TheWorldGirls. We give things a whirl. So like Darina said, anything from Disneyland to Day of the Dead, to Mukbang, if you don't know what that is, go check out an episode in which we try to eat 100 pieces of sushi and get really, really sick. Never Ooh. Have I shaken back and forth like that in my life. And you can also follow us on social media at The World Girls and World Girls WAP if you're on Instagram.
100 pieces of sushi. Steph, you must have led the way on that one, right?
Yes, definitely, Mark. Thank you for thinking that.
Do not lie. Do not lie right now.
I held down the fort. However way you want to interpret that, that's what I did. I provided a lot of support.
Mark, she hid all of the avocado sushi by herself and ate that while Darina and I had to eat all of the fish sushi. It's on tape. There's evidence. She's an avocado girl.
As the only Japanese person in this group, I feel like it's my right to do with the sushi what I wanted to do. But I would never throw you under the bus. It was just the avocado rolls were by me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if I had to, I'm not the world's biggest sushi eater. I will get it down if the challenge is brought. And I would probably lean towards the avocado sushi because avocado, hey kids, that's the good kind of fat. So let's get a recommendation. It doesn't have to be necessarily in the world of Jumanji or even in the world of fantasy adventure or for Steph horror films. What do y'all have as far as a new movie, new TV show? What is everybody watching right now? Let's start with you, Darina.
Look, the best movie of the year already is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I had a feeling you'd say that.
Everyone needs to go see this movie. A24, I am an A24 shill forever. And this movie made me laugh, cry at the same time. It is just such a wonderful, unique, new kind of look at multiverse type of situation. Michelle Yeoh is a freaking badass. I forget his name, the guy who played Data in The Goonies. And Short Round in Indiana Jones. He's back, and it's just wonderful to see him. Jamie Lee Curtis is in it. The music is amazing. Just a wonderful movie, but everybody should go see it. I keep telling people about it.
Yeah, dare I say it's my favorite multiverse. Spicy take, I know. Steph Sabra, your streaming recommendation for everyone, your new film, what are you checking out now?
Maybe I missed the assignment. I picked a show. Earlier, I came back from London. And so I was really exploring the culture out there. And I was asking for like what people were watching. And a show that now Drake is producing, it's called Top Boy. It's on Netflix. It's the re-up version. So there's two Top Boys, but just Top Boy and not the summertime. It's so good. It's kind of like if you like power or like thriller, crime, drug type shows. This is so, but with music, they have legit rappers who are acting who actually can act in it. And so it's a really fun watch.
All right, Roxy, close us out here with your recommendation. You got a high bar to meet with Everything Everywhere All at Once and Top Boy.
So I always try to bring you guys the things that people aren't watching. So, my whole soul wants to say Severance, but y'all already know about that. So this is a show that you might not know about right now. It's called The Other Two. It's an HBO Max show, and it actually aired last year. There's been two seasons. It started on Comedy Central, and so it's been like all over the place, which is why I think it hasn't really found its group. But it stars Molly Shannon, who I feel like that should be a selling point in itself. And yes, Ken Marino is also in it. And I know we've got a lot of industry-based shows, but there's like a little Justin Bieber-like character, and it's about these two siblings who are trying to make it, and their younger brother comes along, and he just makes it so much faster and quicker. It's hysterical, like laugh out loud funny, so good. And I wish that more people were watching this one.
I remember hearing about a great show that Molly Shannon was in, and now I've connected those dots. And obviously I co-sign Severance. My God, season two, get here yesterday. If you all want to be like Alex or his wonderful students out there, or like our friends Sean, Jacob, Nicholas, Sol, et al., go ahead and email us, rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. That's where you can reach out, let us know what movies you want us to talk about on a future episode, like the coming next episodes. Yes, I said episodes because we got a double whammy next week. And I guess it's just the week of Ellis, because we're going to be talking about Return of the Jedi and Top Gun. I cannot believe I'm already on vacation. I don't need to go anywhere. I have beer in the fridge. I have a wonderful dog there. I have a background that's some sort of mountain today on my... If I'm talking about Return of the Jedi or Top Gun or Jumanji for that matter, I'm on vacation, and it was lovely to take the trip with the World Girls today. Roxy Stryer, Doreen Arellano, and Steph Sabra. Beer drinking now, Steph Sabra. Thank you all so much for gracing us with your presence and chatting Jumanji. Best of luck. I know the podcast is going to be a huge hit, as is everything the World Girls do. And please come back soon individually, as a team. We just love having you here at Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong.
Gracias.
We love you, Mark, and Rotten Tomatoes, and Lucy Peducci.
And Brian.
Brian!
And man. Lucy. And the entire team here at Rotten Tomatoes. Brian borrowing his friend Draco, who's a little dog from Christian Rubalcaba today. So Everybody was in the house for this episode of Jumanji. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time here at Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong.